Sitting down today with Adam Stock from Elite Fantasy Basketball, another analyst interview. Let's go balls deep.
I'm the type to get shit done. You the type to observe. March Madness on my speakers, but today's November 23rd. Cause I'm loud in the blunt, yeah. I don't say what I want, yeah. Probably somewhere sunny and tan. Foreign women in the sun, yeah.
That's all that I need. That's all that I need. That's all that I need. Got my brothers with me. Got my brothers with me. And my mama's healthy.
Welcome to the Balls Deep podcast, brought to you by Fantasy Basketball International. I am your host, Adam King, at AdamKing91 on Twitter. Joining me, as I said, Adam Stock. First time on the show. We've had a bit of shuffling around in the background, but we made it. Adam, good to have you on, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to go balls deep.
It's always exciting to go balls deep. Well, let's start at the top. Fantasy basketball for you. We'll sort of, I guess, get into what you do outside of that space a little bit later. But was this always a plan for you to get into fantasy basketball? How did it come about? And I know from your Twitter profile, you went to Columbia University, which is in New York, I believe.
Yeah, downtown New York.
Okay, and so is that where you're based now? So, like, where are you living? How did fantasy basketball come about?
Yeah, so coming out of school, I was a Big Four auditor and consultant. Just in school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I got pretty good marks and I was pretty good at math and finance and all that. So I just kind of fell into it. I was like, I'll get my CPA and then we'll see where it goes. So for those who have done the CPA process, especially with Big Four, it's not fun. Crazy long hours. You're getting underpaid at least the first couple of years. And it's just like, everyone's like, oh yeah, just grind and you'll get there. But like the grind itself was terrible.
Yeah.
So I got in there. I was like, wow, I hate this. But I got to get my CPA. So the second I got my CPA, I got out and I just quit. I didn't jump to the next job right away. And in that kind of little break I had, I started my fantasy basketball site. Just paid $200 to kind of set up the site. Wasn't anything fancy. It looked like it was straight out of 1996. Yeah. I kind of got the idea. I was actually reading from way back in the day, Matt Buser, when he was at Yahoo, he kind of put together a punting article. And it was the first punting article I had seen that wasn't just like punt free throw, you know, like Big Dwight, Big Rondo, like the classic. That all seems like pretty basic these days. But back in the day, there really wasn't much talk about strategy with fantasy basketball. It was just like, pick this guy. And you never really got the why. So that kind of like got my brain going a little bit because I had always punted free throw in the past. And I was like, I don't know if this is actually like works all that well, at least the way that people do it. So from that, I just decided, like, I'm going to put out some punting stuff out there and see how it goes. And it got pretty popular right off the bat. And I just kind of did that on the side. In my professional life, I eventually moved on to a defense contractor. I was just doing some ad hoc stuff for the CFO. But on the side, I was continuing to kind of build up the site. And I think – so I started in 2013, and I think I didn't – decide to monetize it till like 2019. I think it was just kind of like building up, getting more and more traffic to the point where I thought, okay, if I get a certain percentage of this, I can make it work. I snuck into grad school in between at Columbia, like you mentioned. It was in sports management. I still wasn't sure if I wanted to take the website full time at that point. I was actually interning at the biggest a basketball sports agency there and basketball operations. Excel Sports Management, actually, their big guy right now would be Jokic, but they have a million guys. Even though they're maybe not like the biggest name, I believe they actually have like the most guys. So I was doing that for a while, but they don't sponsor, so I couldn't stay there. So I stayed as long as I could, but I knew it wasn't long-term. And then I got to some final round interviews with the NBA PA. But because I'm Canadian and not the US, I kept running into problems. Yeah. So eventually they're like, okay, you have the job. And they're like, let's do like the HR side. And they're like, okay, no, never mind. Because like when you have the job, it's like, are we going to sponsor you or are we just going to find an American? You know, it's hard for some jobs too. This is the same thing. had an interview with the Pacers for analytics for an interview. That was pretty cool. That was a nice ego boost. Like, I wasn't qualified for it, but I got the interview, which is cool. So yeah, I was doing that. I was kind of looking around New York, but running into visa problems, and then COVID hit and my wife had a bit of a health problem. So we went back to Canada and at one point I monetized it or slightly before that I monetized it, and it's just kind of grinding it up from there, essentially. Been doing it full time, did well enough first year where I'm like, okay, I think this isn't where I want it to be, but I can grind it up, and I have been able to grind it up since. So doing it full time now.
Yeah, no, and so fantasy basketball, I guess, in general, was that something you played growing up? Were you, I know a lot of the Americans that I talk to sort of get into fantasy basketball through fantasy football. Is that the sort of the same path for you being in Canada, or is it a little bit typically a different path?
Pretty similar for better or worse, no disrespect for my American friends, but we import a lot of their cultural stuff. So fantasy football is one of them. I played fantasy basketball before fantasy football, but it was like, I'm doing a six man roto league kind of, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing like too serious. Like the odd head to head thing. Like we found some buddies. We had a couple years where we did like 12 team, but mostly it was just me picking up like Yahoo public leagues. And I was like, okay, like it's fun. You usually win them because people aren't that good, but I wouldn't say I was super hardcore into it. I definitely got really into fantasy football at one point, as most people do when the guys do when they're like 22, 23 kind of thing. But eventually I kind of fell out of love with fantasy football just due to the luck factor kind of thing. Yeah. We had a keeper league 1 year and you got to hit three keepers, and I had three of the top 10. And by week six, two of them were done for the year and the other one was like the bust of the year. So I was like, this is enough for me. So I was like, I'm going to focus more on fantasy basketball. Do that kind of, and kind of went from there.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess this isn't specifically a fantasy basketball show, but you mentioned that you sort of came in with the idea, or one of your ideas was to do a little bit more on the punting side of things. And I mean, anyone as well that follows me knows I preach punting. I do it in almost every league that I'm in. And certainly, I would sort of put you at the top there of punting. And I think it's interesting because it's something that I think a lot of people, they either do it or they'd like to do it, but they're not sure how to do it properly. Or and it's something that can go wrong if you don't do it correctly and you draft the wrong players and that sort of thing. It can spiral out of control. So I think it's really good to have that content out there and available for people who would like to explore that strategy a bit more. Is punting something that you would sort of do in every league that you're in, or I guess to stay on brand, or are you sort of okay? Does it depends on who you get in the first or second round, and you sort of be flexible that way, or do you lean into it as much as you can?
In head-to-head leagues, I definitely do it 100% of the time. I don't really see the argument against it in head-to-head leagues. Just a team punting one or two cats and doing it properly is going to beat a team going for all nine, unless that team going for all nine just absolutely smokes the draft, which might, even if you're really good, that might happen like once every few years. Like you can't bank on that. In roto, I'm more flexible. If it's a competitive roto league, that makes me want to punt more. If it's like a casual, like back in the day when doing some Yahoo public leagues, then maybe I'm like, okay, I can just go for nine and let's see this. But in competitive leagues, for the most part, I think you almost have to punt. And really, like when you like draft a team, whether you like it or not, you're probably going to end up punting something. So why not actually do it properly at the beginning of the year instead of realizing in like December, like, oh God, I don't have a shot at these two categories really.
Again, for me, and I've spoken about this, I'm okay in a nine cat league. I will punt four categories. It's you're walking a fine line when you do that, because there's not really a lot of room for error.
Yeah,
it typically works for me. I wouldn't say I win every league that I'm in, but I'm usually in the top two, three, four at sort of best, or at worst. Is that an idea that you're sort of on board with, punting four categories, or are you sort of more let's punt one or two?
I'll be honest, I hate punting four. I actually am a punting guy every year. I'm like, don't punt four. I think you punt up to three. I think these days, especially with guys missing more games, just four is like pretty dangerous. Because even if you're winning like 5-4 every week, you'd win 5-4 15 times. If you lose 7-2 twice, like that cancels out most of your work. Like I think it was 2 years ago in my main league, the team that finished, I want to say third overall in wins, I think they had like 13 wins out of 20, missed the playoffs. And missed the playoffs by like six games just because they had a rough stretch where they got smoked for two or three weeks. And if you're punting four, you can't really recover from that. When it comes to playoffs, definitely. Like you can quadruple punt. Yeah. Like that's the play a lot of the time. But at the beginning of the year, I don't like doing it. And just like if you're interested in it, like my advice is to like just wait till February maybe and then start tweaking things.
Yeah, no, you're right. It is. It does make it hard. You basically never finish top four when you punt that many categories. It's just impossible to do because, as you said, you have one or two off weeks where you lose 7-2 or 8-1 or something, and it drops you way down to sort of 10th or something, and then you've got to scrape your way back. So, yeah, it's. I'm thinking next year because the stress of that. I did it in the punt in the. Industry pickup league, and I just scraped in to eighth, and it was pretty stressful. It was a stressful couple of weeks. So I'm thinking next year I might just sort of maybe I'll scale it back a bit and just do two or three, but we'll see. And anyway, moving off fantasy. So it is your full-time job, as you said. Yeah. So you're one of the few that I've spoken to that are able to do this full-time. So we can't really talk about other work. So let's talk about family. You mentioned to me off air you've got two very young children. So what does family life look like for you?
I'm in my late 30s. Same with my wife. We've had two kids over the last 2 years. One's 25 months yesterday and the other is 10 weeks. So boy and a girl, pretty crazy. So during the, I guess, even the off season kind of, like it's still full days because you're waking up at 7:30 with the kids and then the kids probably aren't in bed 8:30 fully. Like the 10 week old is pretty random too. So it's hard to say if she'll go down or not. So really it's just like full days and then nothing really changes. Like when the season starts, like, I'm working. It's that I'm working instead of doing the childcare, like kind of stuff. So it's really just hectic 24/7. It's good. Like the pros definitely outweigh the cons. You get so many dopamine hits yay with the kids. You see them do something little, you're like, oh my god, this is awesome. It makes you forget about the times when you're pulling out your hair.
And I think I've spoken with a few guys that, much like you, that if it is their full-time job, they are able to work remotely, I suppose. And for you, it's, which actually a question I'll ask shortly, but you're able to work from home, I assume. So you're there even when you're working. Like I know for me, if I mean my kids are off at school and that sort of thing and at friends' houses, but the flexibility to be able to just lend a hand, do a bit of housework when I'm working rather than not being present at all, that was always something that I lent into when my kids were smaller and I was a teacher. I mean at that time I was a bit sort of between careers and my kids were at school and I said, well, I'm going to just go and become a teacher so that I can work with them at school, which I did for about 6 years. So I was always with them and then I just brought them home at the end of the day. I finished work at the same time they finished school and I was able to be here a bit more. So I think that's, for me, that's a real positive and I would assume your wife probably appreciates having you around to lend a hand and not having.
Yeah, even if I can give her a little 20-minute break here and there, it's nice. Or even if the kids just run in and say hello, it's nice. Fortunately, we had the kids after I had like had this site as a subscription site for a while, so I kind of had already become really efficient and stuff like that. I feel like if I just started it while having kids, it would be kind of crazy before you've actually like kind of locked down, like figured out how to do everything, figured out how to be as efficient as possible. I think it would definitely be a lot more stressful if I had two kids 5 years ago than versus
now. Yeah. Yep. And so a question, I guess, around that is, yes, you do have your own brand, Elite Fantasy Basketball.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys that I've spoken to, the fantasy guys anyway, they've sort of, and myself included, have, I guess, not shopped themselves around, but like I do stuff for RotoWire and obviously Fantasy Basketball International. I've done RotoBall. So I've sort of been of that. My path in was to go and work for other providers, other services. And I mean, FBI is something that we're, I suppose, building with. So it's sort of our brand. But yeah. Was that, I guess, so your path is a little bit different in that you just sort of have done your own thing. Was there ever a time when you sort of thought it would just be easier to work for someone else and not have to do all that stuff behind the scenes? Or is working for yourself, it gives you the flexibility to just do what you want to do when you want to do it?
Yeah, I remember back in the day, I don't remember all the specifics, but I'm pretty sure I applied to Bleacher Report and got shut down. Back when Bleacher Report was kind of just like random click stuff. I know they're more serious these days, but I remember I did that. But I wasn't too serious about it. I just like sent them like whatever. I didn't really want it. I was kind of always thinking my own thing. But again, I started in 2013, so it worked out that I went that way. But I think I also had a bit of a first mover advantage. The industry wasn't as kind of like saturated. I don't know how viable what I did would be if I started these days. Like I do think I put out some stuff that kind of made me a little unique, that gave me my own lane. But these days, I think it would definitely be tougher. It'd probably be easier to kind of like shop yourself around. But then that has downsides too. In terms of what I prefer to do, I definitely like the way I did it. Like it's so much more work. Kind of like you have to be, you're the fantasy analyst, but you're also the tech guy, you're the marketing guy, you're everything like that. Cause it's not fantasy football at the end of the day. Like you're only going to make so much money. I would love to hire a team and stuff like that, but that's not realistic. Mm-hmm. So you've got to do everything. The hours, especially at first when you're setting up the site, are crazy. There's like so many things that can go wrong that you would never think that could go wrong. The tech side's the most frustrating thing too, because it can be, this hasn't, like I did some stuff to my site to fix it up. But I remember the first couple of years, like after I turned to a subscription site, it'd be like crashing at like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And you think like, okay, it's just like 4 a.m. was down for 20 minutes. But then you're like, wait a sec, I have so many like subscribers in the Philippines and stuff. And Australia, and this is like screwing them and stuff. But you're like, how do I figure this out at 4 a.m.? And there's just like stuff like that when you're a one-man band, you're just like, it can be a lot. I would definitely say I struggled with the stress side of it for 2 or 3 years. But I think that's kind of the story of like a lot of entrepreneurs. Like it's like it's similar to, I guess, other industries, and you just have to wear so many hats. The nice part about fantasy basketball is that the end product's pretty fun to do.
Podcasting, is that something, like, have you ever thought of creating your own sort of podcast in line with your brand, or is that just sort of another?
In a perfect world, I would like to, like, I didn't do it as much last year, but the year before I was doing one a week, but I haven't like really gone all in. It was just kind of like a little extra because some guys like pods essentially. I in terms of the business side, it would be great for business. Be great for marketing, driving people to the site. But I put out a lot of content, so I need to be disciplined too. That's a bit of a trap when you run your own business. It's like I can do all these great ideas, but you have to figure out what you're good at, what you actually have time for.
Yeah.
So maybe down the road, but then it's like, okay, what do I cut then? Because there's no way to add it with my existing. Like product without cheapening my existing product a little bit, at least.
Yeah. It's definitely a case of spreading yourself too thin, especially with the two small kids and that sort of thing as well. So probably a wise move at the moment, at least. So I guess now away from fantasy basketball and I don't know. Let's start with holidays. I don't know whether you get a lot of time to travel, but if so, and maybe that was something that you and your wife did sort of previous to what life looks like now. Any favorite spots or anywhere that you sort of find yourself coming back to as a regular holiday spot?
Yeah, I almost live in a holiday spot now. So to give the background, I grew up just outside of Toronto, probably 40 minutes. And then, so I worked in Toronto forever and then was in New York getting my master's. And then we came back to Toronto living with my parents because we got forced back by COVID. And we're like, okay, where do you want to go next? Do you want to settle down in a suburb around here? Something like that, get a townhouse or something like that. Or do you want to maybe go somewhere? And my wife's parents are originally from Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And they're in iffy health in their 70s. And my wife is a very compassionate person.
Yeah.
So I was thinking like, okay, we're probably going to make this move eventually. Do you just want to do it now? Because we have some freedom. It's COVID. Let's find a place out there. So Vancouver is really pricey. But we found a spot in a place called Squamish, which is between Vancouver and Whistler. Whistler, for those who don't ski, is arguably the top ski resort in the world. Definitely top five. We're about 40 minutes between Whistler and 40 minutes from Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So I kind of live in a mountain town now. It's also right on the water. It's blown up quite a bit, so it's losing a bit of its charm. I'm sounding like an old small town guy now, so we've had some adventures in terms of where we live. In terms of traveling, honestly, we probably haven't done too many trips. We did do our honeymoon in Africa though. That was pretty neat. Did a safari. That was very, very cool actually. That was probably the biggest trip recently. With kids it's pretty tough. We're just like, can you go down like the street an hour kind of except our 2-year-old gets car sick too, so that's tricky. So recently early 20s with trips and stuff, did some boys trips, did a bunch of dumb stuff to hot places and whatnot, the usual.
And so is I guess thinking of transitioning or into hobbies, that sort of thing, is skiing something that you do living so close to Whistler?
It's definitely people are like, oh, basketball must be your favorite sport. I'm like, no, it's skiing actually. Okay. I love skiing. I grew up skiing a bit. I wouldn't say I grew up a ton, but I was pretty good at it. And then when we got out here, I actually wasn't that interested in it. The first year we were out here, I skied like four times kind of. Yeah. And then one time I was like, okay, let's start doing the tough stuff in Whistler, like the 40, 45 degree stuff, because a pretty good skier, but I'd stayed away from that stuff. And I was like, oh my God, it's like, this is the best thing ever kind of. So Whistler's cool. And when like you're an intermediate skier, but when you kind of go to the more advanced stuff, it really kind of shines. And since then I've been hooked. I try to go once a week in the winter, or sometimes if there's a 2-game day, I'll write that up, do the projections at like 10 p.m. and then go like ski the next day because I'm 40 minutes down the road. So it works out well. And if you're a local kind of, it's super cheap. It's super expensive for vacationers. But if you live around the corner, it's like $40 a trip essentially if you buy the pass. Yeah. It's worked out well where I love skiing and I live next to Whistler and it happens to be cheap, so it's kind of like a perfect storm kind of.
I think it sounds very similar to here. Skiing is something that I didn't grow up doing it. We're not that far from the ski fields here. We're probably an hour and a half to 2 hours, so we're relatively close. And so the option is there for us to do it, but I just, it's not something I did growing up, so it's not something that I do. But I've got a friend that I grew up with who regularly he basically moves to the snow for 3 months. He's often over in France and that sort of thing, doing skiing trips.
If I had like unlimited time and money, that would be I absolutely love it. There's so many good Australian skiers in Whistler, though. Whistler, I would say, especially in the winter, is like most of the workforce, or not most of the workforce, but a huge chunk of the workforce is actually Australian. They come over here and then some stay, some go back, some are just amazing skier. It's funny. It's like the best guy I've ever skied with is Australian. And I was like, how did you get so good being from Australia? Like skiing.
Yeah.
You guys do have some stuff.
We do. Yeah. So where we are, as I said, we're relatively close. We don't get anywhere near as cold as there in Canada. Yeah. And where I live specifically, we don't really get snow. We get close to snow. But it will snow from time to time, but we can see, like if I look out the window here, I can see the snow on the mountains. Oh, so nice. We're close enough that you can see it at times of the year. So skiing is a hobby. And what do we go to next? I'll go to food next. So food. So favorite foods, is it something that you grew up eating? For a lot of people, it's something their mum cooked and they just go back to that. Or have you sort of acquired a taste as you've gotten older?
Yeah, I think I live in New York. I really got into, I don't want to say Mexican food, but Spanish food kind of, just because we lived in Puerto Rican area, for example. So you kind of get like hooked on like the food in the area, a lot of Dominican food in the area. So New York, I kind of developed a bit, I wouldn't say obsession, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. Now, can my gut handle that stuff? Like, not really. I'm kind of sensitive to certain spices and dairy and whatnot. So I put a lot of stuff in my body, but that I shouldn't. So I'd say that, but a lot of time I'm one of those weirdos who just like eats the fuel kind of thing. I'm not that picky in general. Like I'll try anything really, but my wife's an excellent cook really. And whatever she puts in front of me, I'm just like, this is great.
Yeah. Yeah. The bar's pretty low. My bar is very low. I'm just happy to have any food in front of me. Finally, movies, TV shows. Do you get any time to, whether it's with your wife or by yourself, to go to the movies or just to sit at home and watch a movie together? And if so, is there a genre? Is there a favorite movie? That's a really hard question, but is there a favorite TV show or movie?
Yeah. So these days the schedule is basically like get the kids down at 8:30 and then my wife will throw some trash on TV. And I'm like, she's took care of the kids all this. I'm not going to be like, I don't really want to watch Love Island for the last like 40th day in a row. We're currently going through the UK version. I was like, the US version isn't enough. I really hope Canada doesn't get a version, because like we're gonna have to watch that too. So these days it's just like it's Love Island, and then I told her I retired from watching The Bachelor. I can't take that anymore. That's too much for me. In terms of like what shows I like to watch, I like sci-fi stuff. I try to sneak in For All Mankind every now and then. It's on Apple. Yeah, alternate history, sci-fi, like that's my jam. I like the science side to it.
Okay.
To all time stuff, like I loved The Wire back in the day. Used to watch that. It was a lot easier to get TV in when. In my 20s, I guess I watch a ton of basketball. I'm kind of into basketball. Like, do I enjoy watching basketball that much these days? Like, I don't know. Probably not by March. In November, but by the end of the season, I'm just like, oh.
Yeah, it's a bit draining come the end of the season. But actually, you're the first one that's actually sort of said that they've had to watch Love Island and Bachelor and that sort of thing. So there you go.
I think some of those other guys are lying, probably.
They might be.
They might be.
Yeah, that's one of the – I mean, my wife's not really into TV or anything at all, and that's probably one of the benefits, is that if I want to watch something – I choose what I want to watch and when I want to watch it, where I've got a lot of friends who I say, oh, did you watch this? Or have you watched this yet? And they, oh, no, I've got to wait. I've got to watch it with my wife or with my partner. and if I want to go to the movies to see something, I just go. I don't have to wait for her or anything like that. So finally, Olympics. I'm just going to talk about it very briefly, because Canada beat Australia, sadly, 2 days or day or 2 days ago, to put our Olympic campaign on the edge of a knife. I'll say Canada are basically through now. They're through. They're through to the next round. Have you been watching much of the Olympics, and what do you think of Canada's chances?
Yeah, fair amount. We got you guys in rugby sevens too, which with the women, which was a
I know you did.
Yeah, because we had no business doing that. Ended up getting silver, losing to New Zealand. But I was worried about that Australia game for sure. I guess the entire group is just brutal.
Yeah.
And the stuff that the annoying part of it is that Canada's probably, even though they're probably going to go 3-0, they're still probably going to get the States in the semis. So while it's exciting that they're doing so well, I do think they're the second best team. It's kind of a bummer that because of how it's set up, it's like first is probably going to play the third place team. I'm hoping France can upset Germany. I don't think so. I don't think France has no guards.
No.
But so it's very exciting because we're taking this huge leap. Mm. But at the same time, it would be nice to get into the gold medal game. I don't think we're going to. Although I will say it's mostly SGA. So while the program is coming like pretty far, it'd be nice to give him a proper sidekick. Jamal Murray is kind of a shell right now, which is unfortunate. Mm. Yeah, I don't know if he was definitely hurt or not in the playoffs or if he just played bad, but seeing him now, like, he was definitely hurt because he's coming off the bench. He's actually kind of killing us a little bit.
Yeah.
Hopefully it improves as the tournament goes on, but I don't think he will. If he didn't start feeling better after 2 months off, he's probably not going to get better now. But they're a fun team to watch. Like, their perimeter defense is great. SGA, yep. Dwayne, Brooks. We have no bigs, though. Like, Olmec's our best big, and he's a tricky fit. Hopefully Edie is the real deal. We'll probably use him. We got lots of guards. We got lots of wings. It's just we need those bigs, but Canada just isn't producing bigs for some reason.
Yeah, we're in the same boat, actually. So we're our wing defense, we've got guards. We've got bigs, but I wouldn't call them elite when compared to like your Jokic and your Embiid, Anthony Davis, and even
it's just like Landale.
So it's tough. So I think Canada Australia was a good matchup of two teams that don't rely on inside big men to just bang away and score. And we saw that it was a really good game until last quarter. Sort of Canada ran away with it a little bit. I'd like to see. I mean, I think if you don't live in the US, you probably just want to see anyone but the US win at the gold. But I mean, they look good. I'm assuming they beat South Sudan.
They were up
today. So, they were up when I saw, but I had to jump off to get kids ready for school. But they were relatively sort of 15 ahead. So I'm assuming that they won, and will probably go through undefeated. For me, it's just really good to see the global game catching up with the US. It really is now anyone's sort of medal or gold medal. And the fact that the US have had to stack their team with LeBron and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, the best of the best, shows how seriously they're taking it and how they're aware of how good the world is becoming. It's good to see in fantasy, NBA, global leagues, the draft, all sorts of things.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they do the next time out when you got these old guys out of the picture. Because guys like Tatum and Ant will probably be in his prime. Those guys are pretty nice, but I don't think they're like all-time guys, you know? I think about the next Olympics. I'm like, oh, yeah, SGA is probably going to be better than anyone on the U.S. team. Probably already is, actually, to be honest. But he could be like a fair amount better than theirs. So that's a bit of an advantage for us. The U.S. can't really send their B team anymore. But their next version, their next Olympics might be like a B team type just because they don't have the guys coming up as much. It's like some really good guys, but like all-time guys like Steph, LeBron, not really.
Mm. Yeah, it's that next crop. We haven't really discovered that superstar, generational star. Like, they've got three or four of them on the team at the moment and they're all mid-30s kind of thing. So come the next Olympic, I mean, who knows, LeBron.
Yeah,
can we ever write off LeBron? He just keeps turning up and playing well.
Like, he at 45, he could probably average like 25 and 5. At the end of the day, he's still huge. Like, he's slower, but it doesn't matter. Like, his jumper's gotten better. That's offset part of it.
All right. Look, I'm going to let you jump out. Let people know where they can find you and subscribe to your stuff and find all of your content.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Adam G Stock, and the website is just Elite Fantasy Basketball. Subscriptions will be going up late August. I know I'm known as kind of like the punting guy, but I do a lot of roto stuff. I do a lot of points league stuff as well. Projections that are updated daily. There's really a ton of content on the site. So if you're really into fantasy basketball, you're hardcore about it, you want to take it to the next level, you're looking for some more in-depth stuff, it's a good option to check out.
Yep. So go and find Adam on Twitter, as he said, at Adam G Stock, and all the info and subscription information you can get there. Love it if you could like and subscribe for our stuff. Give this video a thumbs up. Really appreciate anyone watching along. We will be back with another analyst interview very soon. Until next time, catch up.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.